it's problems you just have to face.
Oh, if you just put your hand in mine, we're gonna leave all our troubles behind. We're gonna walk and don't look back. Something that can't be done.
Tell her what to do, Rob.
Don't heal your faith in love, remembering what we call.
The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
When Nicole Sandler sits down to do her show, she's the producer, booking the guests, pulling the audio, planning the show, the engineer, running the controls, troubleshooting any problems, playing the sounds, calling the guests, and she's the webmaster, writing the blog, posting the podcast, maintaining the website, not to mention the host, interviewing the guests, explaining the issues, giving opinions, and calling out the bad guys. And then you get the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
And every once in a while, things don't work right. So yesterday, we had no YouTube. You know, this show is, it goes out on YouTube. It goes out at NicoleSandler.com on our Listen Live page. And we're also live on the Progressive Voices Network. And yesterday, we had no YouTube. And it's always something when it, yeah, I do it all myself. And so things sometimes don't work right like that yesterday. And the other thing that happens is sometimes the president decides to take questions from the media just before we go on the air. So I didn't even get to see it, but I've been following on Twitter. I don't know if this will work or not. Let's see if I can play this.
The North Koreans said yesterday that your statement on Tuesday was nonsense. That's the word that they used. Do you have any response to that?
Well, I don't think they mean that. And I think they it's the first time they've heard it like they heard it. And frankly, the people that were questioning that statement, was it too tough? Maybe it wasn't tough enough.
Oh, God.
They've been doing this to our country for a long time, for many years. And it's about time that somebody stuck up for the people of this country and for the people of other countries. So if anything, maybe that statement wasn't tough enough.
He's talking and about fire and fury.
100% by our military. We're backed by everybody. And we're backed by many other leaders. And I noticed that many senators and others today came out very much in favor of what I said.
No, they didn't.
But if anything, that statement may not be tough enough.
What would be tougher than fire and fury?
So that's the third time he said that. It may not have been tough enough. As Digby just tweeted, he sounds revved up on diet pills or something. This preemptive nuclear strike is scaring the living shit out of me. It is me too. So that's going on. You know, yesterday on the show, I hope you heard, we had a great discussion with David Atkins about this still looming divide in the Democratic Party. This time it's over some potential, possible 2020 candidates, right? Kamala Harris, who's the junior senator from California, was the attorney general. Cory Booker, senator from New Jersey, and Deval Patrick, former governor of Massachusetts. Now, I guess somebody wrote an article about those three who are all being talked about as potential candidates in 2020, and perhaps, you know, one or all of them may or may not run. They just all happen to be African American. And what some of the pushback is, despite the fact that all three maybe have issues that you that are red lines for you. This is what David Atkins was talking about, the red lines that would keep you from voting for a candidate. And, you know, for our purposes, we're talking about primary candidates because that's all that we're going to be talking about for the next, well, 3 years, really. In the primary, anything goes. In the primary, you can hope and wish and dream and aspire to the best possible candidate out there, your own personal Bernie Sanders, as it were. And Bernie might not be your choice. It could, you know, maybe you were a Hillary person. That's fine. In the primary, that's who you want, is the person who most fits your definition of the core, your core issues, right? So David Atkins yesterday spoke a bit about what our red lines are, like what are the issues that would keep you from voting for somebody. What I think maybe is more constructive is finding what your core issues are and finding candidates who support those positions. We'll do that with Howie Klein coming up in a little while, and how important it is we get to know what their positions are on those core issues. But right now, listening to Donald Trump, again, I got to think the main goal has to be getting him and that party out of power, right? And we've got a big midterm coming up in 2018. And so any divide on the left, we need to solve. We need to come together. And so I read a great piece at Vox.com today. It's titled, "Who's Truly Rebuilding the Democratic Party?" the activists. And I read it just as I'm seeing on Twitter, a lot of friends and acquaintances are headed into Atlanta for Netroots Nation, which kicked off today. Obviously, I'm not there this year. And I wanted to shine a spotlight on what some of these activists are doing and what we can all do, maybe to bring our side closer together and realize that we are on the same side and realize what the common goal is. So that piece was written by Mike Konzel. He's a fellow with the Roosevelt Institute, and I believe he joins us now. Mike, you there?
I am here, and thank you for the comment on the piece. I'm glad to be joining you.
Well, I'm glad to speak with you. Yeah, I read it at a time when I was a little discouraged over the divide on the left. As we look at what's going on the right and what's happened to our country, and realize that our differences on the left are all, I don't want to say they're small potatoes. They're important. Everybody has issues that are so important to them. We need to be the bigger side that realize maybe issue A isn't my issue, but all these people on my community, that's their most important thing. And it is an important issue. My top issue might not be their top issue, but we can work together to advance our society and work towards the greater good, which I think in the long run would be getting Trump out of office.
I think that's exactly right. Yeah, there's pros and cons to the moment we find ourselves in. And obviously, the Democratic Party is in a pretty weak shape. It's not been this weak since probably the 1920s. And it's not just the federal level, though the federal level is obviously very important, but it's also the issue with what's going on at the state and local level.
Yes.
And so as you can see, this period where Democrats are working really hard to rebuild, to think through what they want to accomplish. One thing I say to look at is to look at the activists. And, President Obama had 8 years in office, and the first four were dominated, and particularly the first two were dominated by things that the agenda was pretty well known. It was healthcare, it was immigration, it was the stimulus and the financial crisis, which was not expected and was thrown in President Obama's lap. It was climate change. Mm-hmm. A lot of stuff was done on a lot of those things. Some things, notably climate change, was not. But that was like a core agenda. And looking in the second half of President Obama's term, at a lot of the activism going on at the local level, you look at the minimum wage fights, fight for 15, you look at the fight for free college, you look at the fight for healthcare, which was going on at the time with Moral Mondays and the fight for Medicaid expansion, mm-hmm. and has since extended, obviously, through Indivisible and all these resistance people fighting to defend the ACA. And you really do have the idea that there is a real agenda there. And it was there in 2016, though it was hard to see because of the mess of the election of 2016. But there is an agenda forming, and it's really comprehensive. And I think it really speaks to a better world that we can fight for together.
And the thing about your piece, which is about activists and these groups that are fighting for health care, for a living wage, for free college, or as I like to put it, tuition free college, and full employment, among other things, is these are all coming from the bottom up. Where I think the Democratic Party gets in trouble is when it does all this top-down stuff. Like we saw just a couple of weeks ago, a notice that they were going to that it was okay to get behind candidates who were anti-choice. That some of their issues were not what was worked on so diligently and hard fought battles at the convention last year, that came up with the platform, the party platform. When they take their cue from the activists, from the people on the ground, the ones who are out there, you talk about this, the group ADAPT. And at the beginning of the piece, which I will post on the blog along with the podcast today at NicoleSandler.com, you talk about how at first you sort of misunderstood what they were doing. And that happens a lot. Sometimes, I mentioned Netroots Nation is just kicking off today. There was an episode a couple of years ago where Black Lives Matter came up and confronted Bernie Sanders. And this caused one of the great divides in the Democratic Party, or on the left, actually, where sometimes we're not in sync with what another group is doing, and we take it the wrong way. You said that members of ADAPT explained to you what they were fighting for, and then you got it.
Yeah. And then I hope you and all your listeners enjoy Netroots Nation. I remember in 2010, I sadly won't make it this year, but back in 2010 when I was there, Dan Chow, who is a military veteran who is gay, went on stage.
I
forget which congressional leaders was there, demanded to know where they were on gay marriage and gays in the military at that point, which was neat. I mean, this is how quickly things move sometimes.
That's
with
right.
activism. In 2010, it was still whether that there would be gays allowed in the military, which Obama eventually went for at the end of 2010. So it's you know, and that obviously upset a lot of people. And the reason I bring up ADAPT, and I think it's a really cool story, is a very similar kind of event to Netroots Nation, the People's Conference, just hosted by several DC groups, Campaign for America's Future in particular. Mm-hmm. You know, ADAPT, which is a group of disabled activists and activists for disability rights, took the stage when Nancy Pelosi was speaking, and they demanded to attention be brought to an issue where whether or not funding could be used to keep people in their communities instead of nursing homes. And the thing about it is, like, obviously they were disruptive there on purpose. They were there to make a message, and a lot of people who, you know, were frustrated with them, and I was frustrated at the time, but then I learned a little bit more and I wasn't. But they were the same people who were on the front lines getting arrested in Congress, showing up at Mitch McConnell's office in wheelchairs, demanding to know what was going to happen to them if Mitch McConnell got his way and destroyed the ACA and Medicaid. And so, you know, the same people who are sometimes frustrating, you got to work with them, you got to figure out how you're going to handle stuff, are the same people who are going to be there when you need your back covered, when people with healthcare. And crucially, two things to learn from the activists is, one is just, you know, they're in the front lines. And so they see the arguments, they see what people, what is working, what is not working, and they're able to articulate it in a very positive and appropriate way. That's really amazing because I think, you know, people talk a lot about Obamacare, and Obamacare is basically you're just debating whether or not you like Obama. But once it became clear it might get taken away, the stories of people who benefited from healthcare expansion, from the Medicaid expansion, from the exchanges became much more powerful. And it itself became a reason to say, Mitch McConnell, you better know what you're doing if you're going to do this. And he clearly didn't know what he was doing. And I think it played an important role in stopping it.
Well, it did. And it's people telling our personal stories. I have one. My listeners know it well. But a year ago, I was diagnosed with lung cancer. The only reason I had insurance was because of the Affordable Care Act. I had my insurance through the exchange. Before that, I couldn't get insurance because of pre-existing conditions. So I'm alive and here today because of the Affordable Care Act. Now, there was a study released by the Kaiser Foundation today that shows that Trump's actions are in some cases doubling and tripling in premiums. I mean, it's even though they weren't successful in repealing it, he's done a lot of damage because of the uncertainty in the market, and a lot of insurers are pulling out and premiums are going up. But we'd even be in a worse position if activists hadn't been out there this whole time, these last few months, protesting. You mentioned Moral Mondays. The Reverend Barber has done such a great job. I think he should be a household name for the work he's done, not only in fighting for health care, but really trying to take back the word morality from the right, who uses it the same way, you know, they gaslight the country on everything else.
I completely agree. And enough. Go ahead.
No, you go.
Oh, I was just going to say, and another thing to keep in mind, you're talking about Moral Mondays, and if you interact with them, or you're better yet part of them, and you know, your listeners should obviously seek out and see if they can join a resistance or Indivisible or Moral Monday or other community group, because just doing the politics really does open your mind and really does explain to you why you're fighting for the things you believe in. And you go to groups, Moral Monday, you go to the Fight for 15, and they are incredibly diverse. They're diverse on gender. I've seen some numbers saying a large majority of people calling Congress to defend the ACA were women. You know, and obviously the Fight for 15 is very, and Mormon is very diverse across Black people, across all people of color. And there's, I think when you sit in the intellectual space, and if you, God forbid, spend too much time on Twitter, you get really caught up into, like, you know, is the Democratic Party for people of color? Is it for economic populism? And, you know, the things with Black Lives Matter and Bernie Sanders last year, you brought up earlier.
Right.
Last year at Netroots Nation, Black Lives Matter activists took over the stage. And if you spend too much time in the intellectual space, I don't think you'll miss how much people on the ground are really able to skillfully navigate these things. When people are fighting for Fight for 15, it's white people and black people and men and women, but they're all together fighting for a living wage and for decency in the workplace. You know, when Moral Monday is going, it's about whether or not you can have health care, whether or not you are going to die because you have a pre-existing condition. Mm-hmm. And those existential threats, they don't paper over and they don't exclude the need for an intersectional analysis, but on the ground, it does become a little bit more solidaristic and it takes a little bit of the heat of Twitter and social media off. So I think paying attention to that, I think, can help navigate us through some difficult times we're going to have in the next couple of years.
Right. And you know, the community is great. There's the up and down sides of social media. I mean, that's where I followed the whole Fight for 15. I remember the day the first protest happened, and I think it was at a fast food place in Brooklyn, if I remember correctly. I had one of the workers who was striking on the show, and watching it spread from New York to Chicago and then around the country, and seeing in many cities around the nation, the minimum wage has been raised to $15, and seeing that fight go, and knowing that, you know what, if you're a Democrat or you identify on the left, I know there's a lot of talk these days about the Democratic Socialists as well. My issue right now, again, as I'm living in constant terror of what the guy in the White House is doing, and seeing that we need to all come together on the left for, as I say, the greater good, to make sure that we can get them out of power and we can advance this agenda that all these activists are working towards. How do you put your own personal needs aside, and this is a ridiculously complex question, and realize that, okay, maybe the tuition-free college is not my issue, but for these young people coming up, it is. It's the most important thing facing them if they want an education and can't, you know, don't want to go into debt for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, I mean, I think a couple things. One is, there's going to be tough conversations about what the priorities are, what to fight for, what not to fight for, how to balance interest of people in communities that are very struggling, and, you know, the business community, which also is worried about Donald Trump, but not all the time, but sometimes. And so I tend to be on the left of those conversations, mm-hmm. and they're going to happen. They're going to be unpleasant, and we're going to fight through them. What I would encourage people to do is, one is, don't get too much caught up in the 2020, like the next presidential election. So much depends on what happens in 2018.
Yes.
The map is very difficult for Democrats. It's bad because of gerrymandering. It's bad because of just the randomness of the Senate elections. And I encourage all your listeners to say, you know, look around your community and look around in the neighboring communities and see what you can do on the ground, because there, an extra 100 people pitching in 5 hours a week really makes a huge difference, where an extra 5 hours a week of, you know, worrying about President Trump is, you know, there's a lot of professional groups that are working on that, and that's just going to drive you up the wall, where you can make a real difference in 2018. And if the Democrats take back the House, that is the best rebuke to Donald Trump and his erratic and irresponsible leadership that we can possibly imagine.
Without a doubt. And now is the prime period when, you know, candidates, when people, when we're looking for good candidates to run. And as if I've read correctly, it seems like there are more people stepping up to run as Democrats, more women than ever before. A lot of veterans are stepping up to run. In fact, we'll be talking with Howie Klein about that in just a few minutes, some of them. And my thought is, rather than draw a red line, you know, I was talking about the kerfuffle over, again, 2020, which is so far off in the distance. We do have to worry about 2018 first and win those congressional seats, as many as possible, there are people fighting over Kamala Harris and Cory Booker, when right now we should be tasked with finding the best progressive candidates to run for Congress in 2018. Find the positions, the things that you believe in, and find candidates that believe the same way you do, rather than looking for things you disagree with them on. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. And again, we're going to have to like think through hard decisions, right? I mean, you know, there's a reason people might be skeptical of someone who is more wedded to the kind of centrist path that, mm-hmm. you know, the idea that there's an electoral strategy through the business community and through the suburbs, when a lot of that was obviously very center to Hillary Clinton's idea, and it didn't pan out. There wasn't a lot of, you know, there's going to be this debate that's going to take place vis-a-vis candidates about base mobilization versus kind of trying to swing centrist voters. And I think the country is so polarized that if the idea you couldn't swing a lot of voters away from Donald Trump and his quite awful campaign, just awfully done and repugnant, it makes me think we have to think a lot harder about our base mobilization. And that will involve tough debates about specific people. But I completely agree with you. You know, if 2018 is a bad year for Democrats, which the number, like just the way the deck is stacked against Democrats, mm-hmm. it is not favorable. That's going to really throw a completely different light into 2020. But if the Democrats have a really good 2018, they feel confident and that the wind's at their back, they can be bolder in what they want to do, and they can fight for a much better world. And they're not just fighting about whether or not Donald Trump is irresponsibly tweeting, but more about why they should be in charge and why they should run the country for the betterment of everyday people.
Right. And it's not only the map that's tough. It's Democrats traditionally don't vote in midterm elections. This is a midterm.
Yes.
All the more reason that it's important to get involved, not just on Twitter or Facebook or signing on to an online petition, which those gall me more than anything because they don't really do anything except get you on mailing lists. But join a group. You mentioned Indivisible, who is just doing amazing stuff, and they're everywhere. And it's a great way to get involved, get out there. Get out the vote is going to be brutally important in 2018, and making people aware that primaries matter. So we get the best, most progressive candidates in the actual race, and then get out there and vote in the actual election.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Find online if you're not aware. I just heard 500, 600 Indivisible chapters, so 10 estates.
Wow.
If there's not one in area, you can start one. And if you have a specific kind of interest, look for those interests that are political. If you're further to the left, look at Democratic Socialists of America, DSA,
right,
which just had a big conference. I mentioned it earlier. There's so many different groups to do, but I think the best thing is to spend a little less time online and a little bit more time with other people thinking through what changes you can make.
That's great advice. Mike Konzol, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it. I'm going to post the link to your article from Vox on my blog, along with the podcast of today's show, so people can read it. There are a ton of groups out there doing great work, and it's easy to join one and get out of the online thing and out with real people and get some good work done. I really appreciate you coming on today.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye. Mike Konzol from the Roosevelt Institute. I was impressed by this piece about the activists being the future. The piece is titled "Who's Truly Rebuilding the Democratic Party? The Activists," and it's true. I sometimes get too wound up with the infighting, seeing it all on Twitter, and realizing that it's a big world out there. We need to get stuff done. If that makes sense. All right. We'll take a break. Howie Klein is coming up today. It is Thursday. So a bit of what's news, and then Howie Klein, and more of the Nicole Sandler Show on the Progressive Voices Network.
I read the news today. Oh, boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
As you know by now, on Tuesday, the president responded to news that North Korea's nuclear capabilities are increasing with the chilling pronouncement.
North Korea best not make any more threats to the United States. They will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen. He has been very threatening beyond a normal statement. And as I said, they will be met with fire, fury, and frankly, power, the likes of which this world has never seen before.
In response, North Korea said Wednesday that it will complete its plans for a missile strike near the U.S. Pacific territory of Guam in mid-August. The North Korean state-run news agency said President Trump, quote, let out a load of nonsense about fire and fury, adding, quote, sound dialogue is not possible with such a guy bereft of reason, and only absolute force can work on him. Trump's remarks prompted North Korea to say it was considering plans to fire four intermediate-range missiles to land 18 to 25 miles from Guam, home to about 163,000 people, and a U.S. military base that includes a submarine squadron, an air base, and a Coast Guard group. State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert held a briefing on Wednesday. She defended the fire and fury rhetoric voiced by the president.
Given those provocations from North Korea, which has been belligerent in the extreme, granted, stipulated, is it helpful or unhelpful for the president to use the kind of language that we have seen previously coming from Kim Jong-un, not from presidents of the United States? Is he exacerbating
the president
problem?
Spoke to him, to Kim Jong-un, in a language that Secretary Tillerson has said, and said this morning, in the kind of language that Kim Jong-un will understand. We would like to see results. The pressure campaign, we see that working. The international community is in agreement with the United States and many of our partners and allies on putting additional pressure on North Korea. The secretary happens to be coming back from the ASEAN conference, where they had tremendous success. It was a good week for diplomacy. I know you all want to obsess over statements and all of that and try to want to make a lot of noise out of that. But what is important to keep in mind is that this diplomatic pressure at ASEAN, at the meeting of the 10 Asian nations, along with the United States, came to a joint agreement and a joint statement and put out a very strong condemnation of North Korea. We are all singing from the same hymn book.
One reporter took issue with her characterization of the media coverage as obsessed.
I just take issue with your choice of the word obsess. I mean, we're not obsessing about this. This is the president of the United States threatening a nuclear-armed country, whether you want to accept it or not, a country that is armed with nuclear weapons, with fire and fury, the likes of which the world has never seen. I don't think that it's obsessing to want to know what to have a further clarification of exactly what that means and whether or not it means that you're preparing to send fire and fury raining down on the North Korean regime.
And I'll let the president's statement stand for itself.
Okay. But I mean, it's not obsessing to want to know more.
You know I see a packed room of journalists here, and normally there aren't half as many as there are here today.
Nauert read a statement from Secretary of Defense James Mattis and said the U.S. is all talking with one voice.
We've had a few statements that have come out today. Secretary Mattis addressed this very issue in a pretty strong statement that he issued earlier today. I'll just read a little bit of it to you in case you have missed it. The United States and our allies have demonstrated capabilities, an unquestionable commitment to defend ourselves from an attack. Kim Jong-un should take heed of the UN Security Council's unified voice and statements from governments the world over who agree that DPRK poses a threat to the global security and stability. The DPRK must choose to stop isolating itself and stand down its pursuit of nuclear weapons, and it goes on. I think the United States is all talking with one voice.
Trump's deputy assistant, Sebastian Gorka, took it a step further.
He's saying don't test America and don't test Donald J. Trump. We are not just a superpower. We were a superpower. We are now a hyperpower. Nobody in the world, especially not North Korea, comes close to challenging our military capabilities.
Details are still unfolding about the FBI's early morning raid of the Alexandria, Virginia apartment of Paul Manafort, Donald Trump's former campaign chairman. The Fed seized documents and other materials related to the special counsel investigation of Russian meddling in the 2016 election. The search warrant indicates investigators may have argued to a federal judge they had reason to believe Manafort couldn't be trusted to turn over all records in response to a grand jury subpoena. Special Counsel Robert Mueller has increased legal pressure on Manafort. Manafort's allies fear that Mueller hopes to build a case against Manafort unrelated to the 2016 campaign in hopes that the former campaign operative would provide info against others in Trump's inner circle in exchange for lessening his own legal exposure. The president continues his so-called working vacation at his golf course in Bedminster, New Jersey. The only thing on his public schedule on Thursday is lunch with Vice President Mike Pence. I got good news. And that's a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. Be sure to check out The Nicole Sandler Show Tuesdays through Thursdays, 3 to 4 Eastern at NicoleSandler.com and on the Progressive Voices Network.
The Nicole Sandler Show is 100% listener supported. Have you given yet? Nicole decided not to put her show behind a paywall, knowing that many can't afford the luxury of paying for a podcast. But if you're able to, she needs your financial support to continue doing this. Consider a monthly subscription. Give when you can. Just visit NicoleSandler.com/donate. Remember, she can't do this without you. Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and french fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTyranny.com on The Nicole Sandler Show.
Hello, Howie Klein.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well. And you?
I'm good, too.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. Oh, so I before we get into it, I saw a tweet from Down With Tyranny. Of course, that's you. A tease about a new you got another Green Day guitar you're going to be giving away at some point, huh?
Yes, we are. I don't know that I'm ready to give the details yet, but the contest is definitely going to start this month. And the way we do these little contests is anyone who donates to the candidate in question or candidates in question, for a week. So any amount. So if we were Republicans, the way we would do this is simple. We would say whoever gives the most money gets the Green Day guitar.
Right.
We don't do it that way. Even if someone gives $1,000, they get a chance to win it. If someone gives $1, they get a chance to win it. It really, we don't want to make this so that only rich people can win this stuff. So this is a beautiful new guitar that Green Day gave us and all the guys in the band autographed it. And it's going to be, you know, let me have a little time for a surprise. For what it's going to be for and how we're going to use the money, et cetera.
Absolutely. But I just thought I saw you tweeted it out and I thought I'd bring it up. For those who don't know, Howie Klein, back in his previous life, was the president of Reprise Records. Green Day, of course, one of your bands. And you've done this with a lot of bands, with a lot of rock and roll paraphernalia over the years. You've offered them up as giveaways to help raise money for candidates. And as you said, you'll put out a certain week during this week, donate whatever you can give to candidate A, and one random donator will win this really cool prize. So it's getting to be that time of the year again.
Yes, it is. And that and we have a whole bunch of these type of things coming up this year. The last time we had a Green Day guitar, we did it. We did the same little contest for Alan Grayson,
right.
And we wound up bringing in $97,000.
Wow.
But the person who won it, if I remember correctly, he was a UPS driver in Ohio, and he donated $10.
Oh, that's very cool. That's very cool. That's great. So
he was really happy. Just wanted a guitar.
Cool. Well, we'll keep everyone posted on that. So Howie Klein, you know, you have a piece up on at downwithtyranny.com that was posted over the weekend. We have an idea who Amy McGrath is now, but what will she do for Kentuckians in Congress? Amy McGrath, I think everyone has seen her video by now. She's a lieutenant colonel in the Marine Corps. She's a fighter pilot. This video, her introductory video, went viral. And I've had so many people send this this to me and said, how about getting her on the show? What's she all about? And that's sort of the question you raise in this piece is, what is she all about? Do we know?
No. So I have also tried to get in touch with her and to find out what she's all about. And the pattern of behavior is very suspicious. I've seen this pattern of behavior for a decade. They don't want to talk because she doesn't really know. She's afraid to say anything. The last Democrat to represent the 6th District of Kentucky, which I think is a very winnable district. It's a flippable district. It's a Republican district. It's drawn to keep Republicans in office, but if the Democrats are going to have a big wave in their favor and against Trump in 2018, this is one of the seats that they have a shot to take. It's not an easy one. It's going to be tough. But if you watch the video, which I recommend everyone do, you can see this is one tough woman. And the people who made this video, whether, you know, that's part of the thing. Do you give credit to the video maker
right.
and their skill, or do you give credit to the campaign or to the candidate? Who do you give the credit to? But somebody deserves credit for making one of the best political videos I've seen all year. It's really, really, really powerful and very, very emotional. I've watched it 3 or 4 times. I love it. I think it's close to 1.5 million people have seen it.
Wow.
And it just comes off great. So, of course, I wanted to find out more about her. Now, as it turns out, her campaign manager is the former campaign manager for the last Democrat who represented the district. And he was just an awful blue dog. I don't know for sure if the campaign manager is an awful blue dog type as well, but I sort of suspect he was, but I don't know for sure. But the candidate was terrible. He's someone that I watched for years. He was awful when he finally went away and became a lobbyist or whatever he is. I was happy to see him go, even though he's replaced by a terrible, even worse Republican. In any case, I got in touch with some of her consultants and some people who know her and a mutual friend of mine and hers who I trust very much. And everyone has told me, yes, they'll get her in touch with me. And it's been over a week now. And okay, she's busy and I'm not, you know, that big of a deal. And I'm sure she has a lot on her mind and a lot she's trying to do. And someday I'll probably hear from her or not. And right. We'll find out. But my guess from the signs I'm reading, and they could be wrong, is that she's probably a moderate Democrat, still a Democrat, not necessarily terrible, but I just don't know. I you know, she certainly, you know, when I saw that video of Randy Bryce's, which is another mm-hmm. Incredible, moving, powerful video, and I reached out to Randy. I mean, I was on the phone with him immediately, and he was better than the video.
Right.
I mean, he's all about policy. He knows policy inside and out. He doesn't have to study up and figure out who he is and what he believes in, what he stands for. He's got it down pat, and he's an inspirational figure. With her, you know, basically it's like her biography is really good.
Yeah.
You get that in the video. She's wonderful. I mean, I want to love this woman. I really, really, really want to love her. But, you know, I don't know where she's at on any issues, on any. I have no idea.
Her website doesn't tell you, unlike, again, Randy Bryce. Now, the one thing they have in common is they're both veterans. And
yes.
You have another piece that you posted yesterday, Why Ted Lieu Just Endorsed Randy Bryce. Now, Ted Lieu is also a veteran. We're seeing a good number of women running and veterans. It's not enough to be a veteran, though. So why did Ted Lieu just endorse Randy Bryce?
Well, I'll tell you something funny
okay.
about that story. I was writing that story with the idea of it coming out today. So I was writing it last night with the idea it would come out today. And when I started writing it, that it had nothing to do with Ted Lieu. It was not. Yeah. He wasn't even mentioned.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he was mentioned as an example of someone who was a veteran who turned out to be really good. So my point always in this thing, and I've talked with you about this before, is with any identity group, whether it's women as an identity group, which is silly, or gays as an identity group, or blacks as an identity mm-hmm. group, or Hispanics, whatever identity group you want to use, scientists, anything, I can tell you people in Congress who belong to that identity group who are amazing, who are great. You take veterans as an identity group, which is what the story was about when I was starting to write it. And I say, yes, identity group veterans. Look at Ted Lieu. He's amazing. He's one of the best members of Congress. Look at Ruben Gallego from Phoenix, Arizona. He's another one who saw active duty in Iraq. Really, really good member of Congress. You know, good voting record, good on leadership qualities. Two veterans who are really serving the country now in Congress, and I'm really proud to know both of them, and I feel great about both of them. On the other hand, you get a guy like Seth Moulton. He's a veteran, and that's all he ever talks about is how he was a veteran, and now he wants to run for president, and he isn't any good. I mean, Progressive Punch rates him an F.
Wow.
F. His voting record is the worst of any of Massachusetts Democrats. Massachusetts only has Democrats in the Senate, so he's the worst member of the Massachusetts delegation in the House, I mean, not the Senate. And he isn't any good. And one of his colleagues who asked me to not use their name, who's on a committee with Moulton, gave me a scorching quote, just absolutely scorching, of why he thinks that Moulton is unfit to be president. That's what he was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And here Moulton's whole thing is, I'm a veteran, I'm a veteran, I'm a veteran. Just like, you know, I mean, you know, you get this all the time. Depending on who you're trying to appeal to, you get these identity group politicians saying, I'm gay, I'm gay, I'm gay, vote for me, I'm gay, in a gay friendly audience, or, you know, people will go and say, hey, look at me, I'm black, you got to vote for me.
Right.
And, you know, yes, any identity group, you want to go back to the gays, the best voting record in Congress overall, for not counting freshmen who just started voting, but people who have been in Congress for more than 1 year. And who's got the best voting record? Mark Pocan, who happens to be gay.
Mm.
Wow. The best member of Congress is gay. That's pretty awesome. Let's vote for gays. No.
Right.
How about the worst member of Congress? The worst Democratic Congress. The actual worst. Kyrsten Sinema.
Right.
In also in Phoenix. Terrible. Horrible.
Made a big deal of it. Right.
So you got the best and you got the worst. And that's what it would be with anything. So I started writing this story yesterday about that, about veterans. How, yes, there are some veterans who are incredible. There are some veterans who are not. Maybe they were good as veterans, good in the Army. God bless them. But that isn't what we're talking about. We're talking about sending someone to Congress. And you got a guy like Randy Bryce, who's a veteran and is someone who I think and Blue America thinks and other people think as well, is going to be a game changer in Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have someone like this woman, Amy McGrath, and we don't know. I mean, we know that someone made an amazing video for her, and it is truly an amazing video. She sounds like an incredible woman.
Yep.
And maybe she's great. I want her to be great. But silence. You know, I quoted an interview that NPR did with her, which kind of sounded like nothing. I mean, I couldn't tell where she was or what she stood for or anything about her.
Right, and that could be the advice she's getting. And you know,
If they're getting that advice now, I guarantee you, I've gone through this with candidates for over a decade. I guarantee you, when they get to Congress, they get worse. They don't get better. Once they get in, they'll be better. It's never happened. Literally, never. They always get worse. I mean, I'm always petrified that our candidates are going to turn out to be crap. And you know, that's why I'm so relieved when we get someone. You know, we supported Ted Lieu when he was running. But he already had a record in the state Senate, so I felt pretty confident that he was going to still be good, and he turned out even better. But then on the other hand, we were so gung ho on this guy. Ruben Kiewin from Las Vegas last time, and he came and sat in my house. We talked and we talked for months afterwards, and we Blue America endorsed him. We did a lot of work for him as well in the independent expenditure area, and we had every reason to believe he would be good. It would be really good because he also had a record in the Nevada state legislature where he was a leader and he did a lot of good work. But there were people who warned me. and I should have listened. And they said, watch out, Howie. You're too enthusiastic about this guy. He's not as good as you think he is. Just take care and don't expect the best from him. You're not going to get it. And I poured over his record and poured over his record, and I really just found good stuff from him. I didn't find bad stuff. But sometimes you in leadership roles, people can, you know, manipulate they might vote right, but if you're not there and you don't know what's going on at the time, you might not be able. I might not be able to read it right. In any case, he got to Congress. He started voting really well. He was way up there. He was one of the ones with the 100% thing, him and Pramila Jayapal. Mm. Now, she turned out to be, even better than we hoped she'd be. Mm-hmm. She's amazing. You know, I wish she could be replaced Nancy Pelosi as speaker, mm-hmm. as leader. but he quickly went from 100% down into the 90s to the 80s. I think he's in the 70s. He's already got an F score. And he joined the New Dems. And he's, you know, and now I'm seeing more and more frequently of him, you know, just sort of voting not very well. It's just a real big disappointment for us. We thought we were getting a progressive fighter, and instead we just got just another garden variety Democrat. I'm not saying he's terrible. I'm just saying it's just, you know, big waste of money for Blue America.
Well, and so I guess, you know, you never really know until you find out, but.
Yeah, you never really know. But you know, the point I'm trying to make is they don't get
better.
If they're already taking bad advice when they're a candidate, mm-hmm. they're just going to be taking even worse advice when they're a member of Congress. I've seen it over and over and over again, and it's pretty awful, and it's heartbreaking for a lot of people. You know, I saw it, you know, years and years ago when we helped Jerry McNerney beat Rahm Emanuel. I mean, McNerney was a grassroots candidate who, you know, he was really motivated. He had good progressive ideas, but he was motivated really by the environment. He was a real environmental guy, and he still is to this day. He's awesome on that. But on other stuff, he went from someone who we had all these hopes for, again, to being, you know, it's another garden variety, okay, Democrat. No, I don't want to criticize him. He's not doing anything specifically wrong. But, you know, as far as, you know, the hopes that we had in helping to elevate him, we first had to beat Rahm Emanuel in the primary. The progressive movement had to, and we did. And we got him nominated. Emanuel was furious that we took a progressive grassroots guy and beat his corporate conservative type candidate. And Emanuel then refused to help him in the general election. And then he went and beat a powerful Republican committee chairman anyway, Richard Pombo. And he went to Congress, and he's still in Congress, and you know, he's okay. I mean, I don't want to put him down. That's not what the point is. But we were looking for greatness. We were looking for someone who would be like Ted Lieu turned out to be,
right? Pramila
Jayapal was turned out to be. We set our hopes really, really high. We're looking for the best of the best. And that's and you get it sometimes, and sometimes, you know, they turn. I mean, I remember when McNerney got elected, a lot of the people in his district who we were working with at the time, you know, the real hardcore McNerney fans from 2 years earlier when he ran and didn't win, you know, these people were just absolutely devastated and heartbroken when he turned out not to be what they thought he was going to be. So it goes that way sometimes. At least he hasn't turned out to be bad.
Right.
He's not a blue dog. He's not a new Dem.
Well,
just another Democrat.
All right. Well, that's better than what it could be. So
yes,
yeah.
Yes, absolutely. So the story yesterday, I keep on going off on tangents. I was writing about how you know, when you're using veterans as an identity group, it doesn't really work. You can't say, yes, he's a veteran, she's a veteran, so they're wonderful.
No, of course not.
Maybe they were wonderful in the Army and they did their service and they deserve our appreciation for that or whatever we feel about veterans. But it doesn't signify they're going to be a good member of Congress at all. You get the good ones like a Ted Lieu or a Ruben Gallego, and then you get ones who aren't as good. So that was what I was writing. And all of a sudden, at about 5:30, I'm trying to watch Chris Hayes on TV. At the same time, I'm writing this post and trying to finish it for what would have been today. And then, boom, in comes Ted Lieu's endorsement of Randy Rice. And then that changed everything for me in terms of the post, because I wanted to get that as quickly as possible, and I wanted to have, like, you know, kind of a little bit of a scoop on that. I wanted to be able to print it before anyone else. And here I have a post slot coming up at 6 o'clock that's kind of related to this. So I thought, great. You know, Ted Lieu's a veteran. Randy Bryce is a veteran. They're the best of the best. And I use the quote and then change the headline of the story as well.
Ah, funny. And Ruben,
if you have it in front of you and you want to read why Ted Lieu did endorse
him,
I think it's very telling.
Okay, here's what he wrote. Randy Bryce is an extraordinary candidate, and we're lucky to have him running for Congress. It would be a very healthy development for the House to have more members who are as committed to the interests of working families and to veterans as he is. I've spoken with Randy, and like several of my colleagues, I've gotten to know him. I can tell you that I look forward to working with him on the issues of social justice, jobs, and economic equality. Climate change and national security motivated me to run for Congress, and I know Randy will champion those issues as well. Washington Democrats have a lot to learn from Randy Bryce. He has a big future in our party and for our country. I'm endorsing Randy because he will do a far better job for Wisconsin and our nation than Paul Ryan.
That's a pretty amazing endorsement. Mm-hmm. I mean, normally these endorsements are, you know, one or two pablum-y kind of lines. And this is a very powerful endorsement. The fact that Ted Lieu was willing to say that Democrats in Washington can learn from this guy, Randy Bryce, that's pretty heavy from a guy who's in Washington and who knows all the power players and who's rising rapidly in the ranks. And then the fact that he's willing to go out and say that he'll be a better member of Congress than the Speaker of the House. I mean, the Speaker of the House, yes, he's obviously a Republican, but he's also the Speaker of the House. I mean, he's got all the power there. And, you know, a lot of Democrats would prefer not to, call attention to not agreeing with him on something as basic as his fitness for office. But you leave it to Ted Lieu. He's fearless and courageous.
And you have a Blue America page up for veterans. So are there other veterans besides Randy and the incumbents, Ted Lieu and Ruben Gallego, that are veterans that you've endorsed?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And someday, I mean, I'll tell you, Nicole, I really hope that we're going to wind up having Amy McGrath on that page someday,
yes,
too. I mean, she'll never go on that page until I'm persuaded that she's a real progressive and believes in progressive values and will fight for the progressive values. But I hope she does, and I hope to put her up on there. But right now we have a former Marine colonel who's going up against Daryl Issa, a guy named Doug Applegate in the San Diego, Southern Orange County area. And he looks like a very, very good bet to win and beat Issa. He almost beat Issa last time. He lost by a fraction of a percent. And
that was the last race that was called. It was that close.
Yes, it didn't get called till February.
Right.
They had recounts in different areas. And anyway, so Doug is wonderful. Again, a former Marine colonel. And it's the most Marine veteran district
in the
country. It's full of Marines and veterans. So not just a military district, but a Marine district. Mm. And they know what it means to be a Marine colonel. You know, Nancy Pelosi tried pushing him around a little bit already, and it was a laugh. I mean, he's not going to be pushed around by anybody. So anyway, so he's on our list. The other one is an incredibly smart guy. I don't know what branch of the service he was in. I believe he was in the Army, but it's a guy named James Thompson, and he was the Bernie-crat that ran in Kansas last time. Mm. So he beat a conservative Democrat, kind of like an establishment guy. It wasn't a primary, it was a convention, but he became the nominee of the Democratic Party, and the Democratic Party abandoned him. I mean, while they were spending $23 million on Ossoff, they spent nothing on James Thompson. They refused to spend any money on him. And he did really, really well. I mean, this is the Wichita district, the fourth district of Kansas, and it's a very, very conservative district that's dominated by the Koch brothers, whose home is there.
Sure.
And it was a special election to replace Mike Pompeo, who Trump had named
CIA
CIA.
Right.
And Thompson did incredibly well. He upped the Democratic percentage of the vote by double digits, and he feels that he's made so much progress that he is now in a position to actually win the seat. So he's running again. And the DCCC is, again, not interested, not doing anything to help him in any way. I don't know that they're trying to harm him, which they sometimes do, but they're just ignoring the race. And he's definitely a Blue America candidate. We've endorsed him. He's on our Blue America congressional page and also on this veterans page.
Great.
Great. And I think, when is it? I think it's coming up, like, it's not today, but coming up really soon, he's going to be doing an AMA on the Sanders for President Reddit page. Today I know it's Kathy Allen is doing that, the doctor who decided to run against Jason Chaffetz. And she had some really good news, by the way. Now we're going off on a tangent, but she yesterday, the son of, I believe his name is Robert Bennett, the son of Robert Bennett, who is a longtime senator and very, very respected and liked by kind of mainstream conservative types in Utah. Well, his son, Jim Bennett, declared that he's running, but not as a Republican. He's running as like kind of like a conservative third party candidate. Hmm. He's got a really big name and a big following. And what that's going to do is split the Republican vote in the special election to replace Chaffetz, because Chaffetz decided to retire from Congress. So it's an open seat. So in November, there'll be a special election to replace him. So Kathy Allen, who's a physician, is the Democrat running, a progressive Democrat, and she's going up against a Republican in the general and Jim Bennett running. Wow. I think it's the, I don't know, something Utah party. But it's you know, the one guy is a crazy right wing Trump nut, and then we have I don't want to call him a moderate, because he's not a moderate, he's a conservative, but he's a mainstream conservative, not a moderate. He's just a regular, you know, again, garden variety Republican conservative. So he doesn't have much to offer the kind of people who listen to your show or who read my blog. But what he does have to offer us is the ability to split the Republican vote and give Kathy a chance to actually win this very, very, very red seat.
Great. Well, that's exciting. Yeah, yeah, and Jason
Chaffetz. AMA at the Sanders for President website.
Right, that's where you did it. How did yours go, by the way, when you did that?
Mine went well. It was very time consuming. It you know, I had to put a lot of energy into it. Most of the questions were really, really good. There were a lot of really smart and interested people who had some real good questions for me that were made me think hard and long about things. But then there were also, you know, some clowns who, you know, said silly things like, you know, denouncing Ted Lieu and Alan Grayson. Why? Because, you know, claiming falsely that Ted Lieu wasn't a co-sponsor of Medicare for All.
Oh, God.
Ted Lieu was a co-sponsor on day one.
Right.
There were 52 Democrats who signed on as co-sponsors on day one. Ted is one of them. And this person claimed he wasn't a co-sponsor. I don't know why they would say that, unless they were trying
trolls
to assassinate his
character. Yeah, they're just trolls.
And denouncing Alan Grayson for not being one of the signatories. And I said, well, Alan Grayson was a signator when he was a member of Congress. He was a co-sponsor and wrote part of it himself, the part that covers eyes, ears, and teeth.
Right.
That's Alan's bill. That's incorporated in this thing. But he can't be a co-sponsor now. He's not in Congress now.
Right.
And I mean, I don't know. You know, so how do you deal with, like you said, the trolls?
Yeah, you got to ignore them. Anyway, Howie, the music's playing. That means we're out of time. We've blasted through 30 minutes. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But
all right, well,
time
then
well spent.
I'll see you next week.
Yes, we will. Howie Klein from Down with Tyranny and the Blue America PAC. Thank you so much, Howie.
Thank you, Nicole.
Bye. All right, and with that, we come to the end of another program. It's been a weird day for me. Sorry about that. Tomorrow, the awesome Will Bunch will be here from the Philadelphia Daily News. We got a few things to talk about. His idea for a national moratorium and a question about that nuclear thing in North Korea, too. Have a great day, everyone. See you tomorrow.
It's Thursday, August 10, 2017.
Evidence for a changing climate abounds from the top of the atmosphere to the depths of the ocean, and Americans are feeling the effects of climate change right now.
Federal scientists leak climate assessment report.
Just because we pulled out of the Paris Accord doesn't mean we don't believe in climate protection.
Trump administration officially files to withdraw from the Paris Climate Agreement, but may want to stay in. EPA report proves environmental regulations don't hurt the economy. Plus, good news, keeping Obama's climate policies would save Americans $350 billion.
All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
It was released and leaked out of fear the Trump administration could change or suppress the report. So, we now live in a world where climate science has to be leaked. Where are we going to have our local weather from? Whistleblowers in a shadowy garage?
Welcome to my world. This is your Green News Report.
It's going to be unseasonably warm this weekend. Highs in the low 90s. You didn't hear it from me.
Okay, Desi Doyen, what a world. We are now leaking climate reports because we're afraid that the president of the United States will not sign off on actual science.
Yeah, that's right. 13 federal agencies have offered the strongest conclusions yet that human activity is altering the planet's temperature. Federal scientists released a final draft version of the sweeping federal report to the New York Times, reportedly to ensure that its conclusions receive the widest possible public attention and to preempt any potential changes by Trump administration political appointees. The National Climate Assessment, compiled every 4 years by law, in it the scientists warn that burning fossil fuels is already driving a steep increase in extreme weather disasters like heat waves, droughts, and floods, and in rising sea levels that are impacting Americans now in every single state, saying, quote, humanity is conducting an unprecedented experiment with the Earth's climate system. There are no alternative explanations.
So this was leaked to the media because they were concerned that the administration might change it before the administration must approve it in about a week or two.
Yes, the report directly contradicts everything that President Trump and his administration have said about global warming. That final approval is due August 18th, and it will be interesting to see how and if anything changes.
And if they sign it, oh, what a tangled web we weave.
Just one or two more points from that report. It concludes that recent decades have been the warmest in 1,500 years. The average temperature in the U.S. has risen rapidly since 1980, and human activities are responsible for the majority of the global temperature increase since 1950. They warn that unless carbon emissions are cut now, global temperatures will continue to rise with increasingly dire effects on the lives of all Americans.
Oh, man, they can't approve that. August 18?
Yep.
We'll be watching.
Meanwhile, the Trump administration this week informed the United Nations that it still intends to withdraw the U.S. from the historic Paris Climate Agreement. But in the meantime, it intends to keep its seat at the negotiating table, in part to, quote, work with other countries to help them access and use fossil fuels more cleanly and efficiently.
Oh, I'm sure those other countries will welcome them very much.
U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations Nikki Haley on the Today Show this week said that the Trump administration's withdrawal from the Paris Climate Agreement doesn't mean they don't actually believe in climate protection.
We're not saying that climate change is not real. It is real. It's how do you have that balance between making sure you've got jobs and businesses moving and then also making sure you protect your climate.
Actually, a new Columbia University study debunks those false assertions. The study found that the Obama administration's climate policies would, if left in place, actually save Americans more than $340 billion a year by 2030 from avoiding the costs of environmental damage from climate change, like damage to agricultural growing regions, for example, and savings on healthcare costs and that the policies would spur innovation, which spurs jobs. Finally, Trump's own EPA just debunked Trump on the cost of environmental regulations. A new report from the EPA, mandated by law, that was released this week, proves that environmental regulations don't hurt the economy. The EPA touts that since the passage of the Clean Air Act in 1970, the U.S. economy has more than tripled, the amount of energy used has surged along with the population, and at the same time, the levels of six major toxic pollutants have declined dramatically, with Americans suffering fewer unhealthy air quality days than ever before, and with visibility at our national parks improving substantially.
Don't waste their time with facts, figures, numbers, and provable statistics. You ought to know that by now, Desi Doyen. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone.